Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. In the search for better treatment of mental health issues and illnesses, one large factor is the trade-off between the efficacy of the treatment versus its unpleasant or damaging side effects. At the Laureate Institute of Brain Research here in Tulsa, investigators are returning to one of its oldest therapies, electrical stimulation of the brain, but in a very different way today, using microvoltage doses of electricity with potential exciting applications in a range of mental illnesses and dysfunctions. Transcranial electrical stimulation is the name for the therapy, and my guest today has conducted research and authored numerous papers on its potential effectiveness on a range of addictions as a way to curb cravings, or in pain management and cognitive rehabilitation. Dr. Hamed Ekhtiari is an associate investigator at the Laureate Institute for Brain Research. And prior to joining LIBOR as a researcher, he served as director of the Translational Neuroscience Program at the Institute for Cognitive Science Studies at the Tehran University of Medical Sciences. He'll be speaking to University of Tulsa engineering students about this therapy's potential impacts and the potential collaborations with engineers to create new medical devices tomorrow at noon in an open lecture at the university's Keplinger Hall. He joins us today to talk about therapy and its potential here on Studio Tulsa. Dr. Ekhtiari, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Your work is involved in doing research on an old technology when it comes to treating mental illness. It's the use of electricity and brain therapy. But you're doing a very different use of electricity, and it's called transcranial direct current stimulation or transcranial electrical stimulation. What is it exactly?
It's a really kind of old technology in terms of thinking about how we might be able to deliver currents, electrical currents, from the skull without even opening the skull. And people have been doing this technology for last 100 years. So people have been trying to see how they might be able to change brain activities and brain function by delivering currents from the skull. And we know that when we talk about brain, when we go back to the high school, you can just remember that when we have been talking about brain essentially has two major biological function. One function is the chemical function, and the other is an electrical function. And by different medications, we just try to change chemical functions, but we can also change electrical functions. So from something like 100 years ago, we knew that we can change electrical functions inside the brain by delivering current to the skull. And the optimum way for showing that is something effective is essentially something that is called electroconvulsotropy, ECT.
This is what we know as shock therapy.
Exactly, shocktropy. Yeah. And the challenge is that shocktropy, or the ECT, electroconvulsotropy, that people use a big amount of current to the skull, has been introduced in 1938. So from that period of time, we knew that it is an effective intervention. But the challenge, as you mentioned, that people, it doesn't have a really good positive connotation. When you talk about that, it always associates with some negative feeling. And it's really interesting. That's a really effective intervention. And comparing to the side effects, it has very kind of limited amount of side effects, and it has very good efficacy. But in the public eye, it doesn't have a really good reputation.
The perception is it's going to change my personality as well as alleviate maybe issues of depression or schizophrenia.
It is not true. Yeah. And we already use that technology. Mm-hmm. But from that period of time, as people have not been really interested to that technology, it has not been really successful to grow, the brain stimulation technologies. But meanwhile, we had lots of big pharma companies behind some of the new advanced medications from 1916 and 1950s. And after World War II, we had discoveries with lots of really good psychiatric medications. And they have been really effective. So people started to use most of the time medications. And using brain stimulation for mental health disorder has not been really successful to grow. And you can imagine that also we had lots of big pharma companies behind those medications. But when we talk about brain stimulation technology, it doesn't have that level of financial benefit for companies that make these devices. So it has not been really successful till something like kind of 1980, 1999. from that period of time, people realized that it seems that we are not progressing very well for developing new medications for psychiatric disorders.
And the side effects associated with those medications are as pronounced as what we would think from electroconvulsive therapy, or maybe even worse sometimes.
Exactly. And meanwhile, we are understanding that there are people who are not very much responsive to some of these medications. So people have started to think that, okay, is there any chance that we can go back and rediscover what we had with electrical stimulation? Is there any chance that we can bring back those electrical stimulation? And people have started to bring ideas to see how they might be able to use transcranial brain stimulation. And for being able to do transcranial brain stimulation, we have two major technologies. One technology called transcranial magnetic stimulation, and the other is called transcranial electrical stimulation.
Or sometimes it's referred to as direct current.
Exactly. Yeah. Because most of the time we use direct current, but we can also use alternating current. So The first step for transcranial electrical stimulation was transcranial direct current stimulation that was called TDCS. Mm-hmm. But we also have TACS, I mean, we can use alternating current. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, we have transcranial magnetic stimulation, which is called TMS. And we, over the last kind of 20 years, people have been successful to show that TMS could be useful for people who are already resistant to some of the medications that we have. And we already have FDA approval for being able to use transcranial magnetic stimulation for treatment-resistant depression. And there are many other opportunities for transcranial magnetic stimulation, and also great opportunities for transcranial electrical stimulation. But meanwhile, both of these technologies, they essentially use different engineering technologies to be able to deliver a little amount of current inside the brain.
We're talking microvoltage or?
Exactly.
So when you're talking about convulsive therapies, you're talking about lots of volts and probably a bit of a light amperage. And then with transcranial electrical stimulation today, it's very small. Something that would be feel like a prickling of the skin or something like that?
Exactly. For transcranial electrical stimulation, we deliver the currents that could be generated by a simple 9-volt battery.
Okay.
So it's really simple and it's scalable and the technology is cheap. So that's one of the things that I really like about transcranial electrical stimulation, because I can make devices for transcranial electrical stimulation that could be used in refugee camps in Kenya. So it's a really simple, portable. We can just put it in a box and send it to different places. And I receive lots of kind of feedback for that. For example, as I mentioned, that one of my friends right now works in one of the refugee camps in Central Africa. And they have people with lots of trauma there. And they want to have something that would be cheap, easy to deliver, and easy to kind of implement. And we have started to discuss, okay, there are opportunities for transcranial electrical stimulation. We can make these devices with $200, $300, and we can easily provide you with opportunities to use these electrical stimulation in really rural areas. And that's the main reason that I really, really like about this technology. Transcranial magnetic stimulation is a bit kind of more expensive technology because you need to have specific capacitors to be able to deliver those currents. So the devices are something like a couple of $10,000. So the device is more expensive. But for transcranial electrical stimulation, we probably can make devices at the cost of something like a headphone. Not a simple headphone, but I mean a more kind of advanced headphone. So it could be really easy to use and easy to generate.
So what's the efficacy of the therapy? How long does it last? What is the process?
That's the complex part of it. We know that there is an effect. Mm-hmm. We know we can change brain functions by currents over the skull. But the challenge is we still don't know what is the optimal level of current that we should deliver and what are the areas that we need to stimulate. So that's the main challenge.
And that's what's been going on in research like at LIBOR and many other facilities around the world, where you're looking at, first of all, the therapy, not only for depression, but I know you've been doing a lot in addiction, you know, helping with addiction, looking at everything from recovering from brain injury, after effects of stroke to counteract the stroke's effects, a whole range, Alzheimer's, the whole range of therapies. But it sounds like this is where we're really in the clinical phase now of trying to understand where do we put the electrodes, how much voltage, microvoltage are we applying, how long do the therapy sessions last, how many do you have to do to see lasting effects?
Exactly.
And so what are we learning right now?
That's exactly what we try to do. And the really good thing that we already have here at LIBER in Tulsa is that we have a state-of-art neuroimaging facility here that is unique across the country, because we have two research-devoted MR scanner and lots of other technologies here at Tulsa that we can use to follow and monitor what is going on when we do electrical stimulation inside the brain. So that's a really unique opportunity. So we can put people inside the MR scanner, we can see what is really happening inside their brain, then we can do the stimulation, and then we can put them again inside the scanner and see what has happened after that specific stimulation. So that's a really unique opportunity, and that is something that we are looking for in terms of how we might be able to find those areas that are going to be targeted for our stimulation and how we might be able to define what are the optimum levels of stimulation inside the brain. And meanwhile, furthermore, we are trying right now to bring in people from University of Tulsa, from OU, from other universities in the town, because we need an interdisciplinary collaboration to not just only kind of use available technology, but also advance the technology, because there are many ideas that we already have. Because what we do at LIBER is we try to record what is happening inside the brain. So we already have a great idea that what are the things that might be a good target for us to change inside the brain. But the challenge is that, okay, now we know we want to target those things, but the available technologies, sometimes they do not do whatever we like to do. And we like to have in-home engineers here in Tulsa that would be able to exactly produce what we want to have for stimulation. So that's what we want to do. And that's the main reason I'm trying to persuade people, grad students, undergrad students from engineering departments here in Tulsa, to join us for that specific collaborative effort, to be able to make that technology in a way that we can deliver the current to what we want to have inside the brain.
And not have to go to LIBOR. Would it be at a doctor's office, or could it be done at home?
In long term, we hope that it would be something that people even can have with themselves. Right now, I'm discussing with some of the companies that are doing these type of technologies, that they can even make things that are really easy to use. So they can make it something like a headphone. People can put the headphone over their head, and they can just put some electrodes over that specific headphone and then deliver current with the specific mobile applications that we can control the current in a way that we like. And even we can control the current from the physician's office, but people can have the device in their home. So that's the really good thing about this technology.
Yeah, and so for those who are completely unfamiliar with how the technology works, is it a matter of you put the electrodes on for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes? And what do we think is actually happening inside the brain when the current is going through?
What we do is essentially in the transcranial direct current stimulation, we put two electrodes over the head, or one electrode over the head and the other electrode on the other part of the body. When we have the anodal electrode, the anodal electrode would be able to stimulate that area that we put the anode over that area. And the cathodal electrode would be able to inhibit that area. So sometimes you want to, for example, stimulate the right frontal cortex and inhibit the left frontal cortex. And we can just put the electrodes over those areas.
So it's really almost writing a prescription in
exactly.
A way.
Exactly. And then we can also put electrodes on other parts of the brain as well, delivering specific types of currents. And most of the protocols right now is about something like 20 minutes. Okay. And we realized that the 20 minutes protocol would be able to have an after effect for probably a few hours. But the interesting thing is that if we continue that protocol every day, the long-lasting effect could be, after 2 weeks, it could last for something like 3 months. So there are already studies that, for example, people have done for pain. And they realize that when they do a protocol for pain for 20 days, then they can have an effect for 3 months. So people can be even medication-free for 3 months. But I should kind of emphasize on that point that this technology is still not for the clinical use. We are just exploring the potentials, and we are not, and I'm not a kind of licensed psychiatrist here. I'm not kind of providing these types of kind of things, so people are not going to call me after the talk show discussing about what are the things that they can receive. No, we are not delivering these things for the clinical practice right now, but we can see lots of potentials for the future.
Right. And I assume what's also happening in the brain with these repeated sessions is basically the brain is learning to adapt from this feeling you're talking about. It's increasing the plasticity of the brain?
Exactly. So we have been able to show one of the first studies that have been published in the field showing that when we do this type of brain stimulation, we can see that how brain networks would change their behavior over time. So that's a really, really interesting thing.
So in the case of depression, it's alleviating negative aspects of the illness?
That's the really interesting thing that we can see because we already have this opportunity to see that what are the areas in the brain that would not work really well in depression or other mental health disorders. And then we are hopeful to be able to deliver currents in a way to those areas that would change the plasticity inside the brain towards what we call a normal, healthy pattern of activation inside the brain. So that's the beauty of this technology. And the really good thing is that we already have this opportunity to measure these changes inside the brain. And meanwhile, I should mention that we also, right now, we have started to kind of realize some of the challenges that we have in the field. One of the major challenges that we have is that there are people who are very well responsive. There are people who are not responsive. Mm. And that's one of the big challenges they already have. I'm just thinking that why is there are people who are not responsive?
But that's for all the range of therapies. When it comes to, you know, depression, there are people who react great to a particular drug and it doesn't affect the other, or sometimes it makes their symptoms worse.
Exactly. That's exactly what we have with medication. And that's exactly what we have with electrical stimulation as well. But the challenge that we really want to see how we might be able to predict who is going to be responsive. And that is one of the major things that we are doing at LIBER right now. We try to see how we might be able to find people who are going to be responsive and those who are not going to be responsive. And meanwhile, thinking that, okay, if this person is not responsive, why he or she is not responsive? And then personalize the intervention for that person in a way that he or she would also be able to have benefit from that medication. So that specific intervention. So we hope that in the future, we would be able to design these types of stimulation for each individual, thinking about, okay, if you have this specific brain structure, if you have this specific brain pattern of brain activation, we need to deliver current to these areas in the brain to change that. So that's what is called personalized medicine. And we hope to be able to have personalized medicine with transcranial electrical stimulation. And that is the other part that we really need those brilliant brains from Tulsa who would be interested to join us in this specific effort, because we need to have people who would be able to help us, because there are lots of really complex computational processes to be able to process the brain images that we have for each individual and then think that, okay, for this specific brain, we need to do some computational modeling to see what are the areas that would receive current and how we might be able to put the electrodes over different parts of the brain to deliver current to that specific targeted area. So that's something that makes me really thrilled about the future of this field. I think that there are many potentials for that. And the next level would be just having something like this is called closed-loop stimulation. And by closed-loop, I mean we can record, see what are the things that are abnormal. We can stimulate, and then we can record again, and then stimulate again to go towards that specific point that we want to reach for having a healthy brain and normal acting brain. And that closed loop stimulation is really great. So we are right now trying to see how we might be able to both record and stimulate. And that's one of the major things that I want to do in my lab at LIBER in the future for the next 30 years.
Yeah, I would think with the internet now, it would be just a matter of just plugging in whatever device you develop and then conducting the session, and it goes off to a doctor and a doctor can interpret, right?
Exactly. That's the beauty of this field. So we can ask people to have these wearable technologies. They can, it's sort of like a cap. They can put it on their head. They can have it even in their home. Or, for example, for drug users, one of the major challenges that we have for drug use is that they have periods of time that they have intensive craving, and they cannot control their craving. And when I talk with normal people who have never kind of experienced the drug craving, I just kind of try to make an analogy with food craving. Sometimes we have an intensive level of food craving, and we know that this food is not going to be good for us, but we cannot control that. And for drug craving is really a disabling feeling, disabling urge. So people cannot resist for that. And if we can provide people with a stimulation that would help them even for a few minutes of that, at the kind of the top of that urge, just help them to control that craving for a few minutes, that would save lives. And we, with the challenges that we lost last year in the United States, we lost 42,000 lives to just drug overdose. And that's really shocking.
My guest today is Hamid Akhtiari, and he's associate investigator at the Laureate Institute for Brain Research, LIBOR. He'll be speaking tomorrow on the University of Tulsa campus on how non-invasive electrical brain stimulations, it's a potential impact on mental health for the IEEE here at the University of Tulsa. It's noon at Keplinger Hall, and it's free to the public. And, you know, this idea of a brain cap for somebody who's trying to cigarette cessation or drug cessation, just putting on a cap when those cravings comes on, and all of a sudden this current is mediating those cravings. That sounds like an amazing potential therapy. But what's really interesting, it's this therapy, I mean, it has possibilities of working in a whole range of areas. Can you give us a sense of the range of possible usage where we're seeing clinical trials? I know you've done stuff on addiction, but what are some of the other areas besides depression or schizophrenia? Is it Alzheimer's? Well, give us a sense.
There are areas that we have been more successful to have positive results, and there are areas that we have not been really very much successful. For example, for most of the anxiety-related disorders, we have not been that much successful. Mm-hmm. So, and people are still discussing about why we have not been that much successful. So we are still discussing about potential changes in technology for that specific type of kind of disorders. But there are areas that we have been very much successful. We are, for example, for the field of migraine, for different types of headaches, there are potentials that people are exploring right now. I should kind of reemphasize that it's not in the clinical practice yet, but there are people who are trying to bring these technologies to the clinical practice. But as you mentioned, that there are great hopes for probably chronic pain. Mm-hmm. There are great hopes for stroke rehabilitation. There are hopes for being able to use this technology for even something like multiple sclerosis or some other disorders. And we know that sometimes we won't be able to change the entire pathologic process of the disease, but we can just reduce one of the side effects, one of the major complications of the disease. And that would also be really hopeful, because for some of these disorders, we do not have any medication. For example, for methamphetamine addiction, that I'm right now mainly focused to that, we do not have any medication that would be effective. So if we can make something that would even have a 20% effect, that would be something really helpful. And people realize that. Even people in the National Institute of Health, people in FDA, they started to discuss about that. And we are going to have a meeting in August with people from NIH, from FDA, discussing about how they might be able to help people in the clinical, in the research side, to bring these devices to the clinical practice. And we still need probably next 3-4 years to be able to reach to that point, but we are trying hard.
I want to go back to something you were speaking about earlier, Dr. Akhtiari. That has to do with a refugee camp in Africa where people have experienced traumatic experiences and are in desperate straits. They've probably experienced post-traumatic symptoms, even military personnel in the field. Is this a possible application down the road where, you know, before you come back to the United States after a foreign tour of duty and you've been exposed to traumatic situations, that you put on this cap for a couple of months as you're returning back home? Has the Defense Department shown any interest in something like this?
That's a really important question. Let me start from this point. interestingly, we realize over time that these types of technologies are not very much effective in improving cognitive functions among normal functioning human beings. So if you are already normal functioning and you want to increase, for example, your memory, we have not been really successful in being able to help people who already have really good functions. There are positive evidence. For example, people try to see how they might be able to increase memory for those who are jet fighters, because they need to learn some maps really rapidly. And they had some positive findings that there might be potential hopes for that. But in general, we didn't have that much positive results for improving a specific cognitive function. And one of the main reasons is that our brain processes are really complex. So improving that complex machine is really hard. But disturbing that machine is easier. So sometimes we just want to kind of disrupt an ongoing process. And we realize over time that it's probably one of the best types of interventions that we can. If there is something that's going on and it's not healthy, we can probably disrupt that. That's probably the best opportunity that we have. And there are many kind of abnormal brain processes that we really don't like. And sometimes one of those kind of abnormal processes would be related to generating memories that are related to trauma or related to drug use or related to things that we really don't like those memories. So we want to find potentials that we can just disrupt those memories or we can just rewrite over those memories. So for that, those specific kind of ideas, there are potential hopes. And people have started to discuss about that. People are in different labs, they are collaborating with different institutes, with DARPA, with lots of different kind of federal institutes, trying to see how we might be able to use that specific technology, helping people who are in the process of generating those memories that are traumatic. So if we can intervene as rapid as possible, right after that traumatic exposure.
When a refugee arrives in a refugee camp.
Exactly. Uh-huh. That's exactly the golden time. Yeah. Is there any chance that we can change at that period of time before letting that memory to be consolidated in a way that we cannot change? Or even right now we are thinking that is there any chance that we can just recall those memories? Because we know that when we recall those memories, those areas in the brain would get activated. And then when we recall those memories are vulnerable for something like 1 hour. So is there a chance that we can recall those memories and then intervene in the rewiring and target them in the process that is called memory reconsolidation? So there are potentials that we might be able to do that, hopefully reconsolidate memory in a way that would be healthy. And it seems like science fiction, but the reality is that there are serious scientific hopes for that. And I'm not going to overstate what we have. There are science and scientific research about hope. We are hopeful people. But meanwhile, there are positive initial evidences that makes us more hopeful about the future.
Hamid Ekhtiari, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Dr. Hamid Ekhtiari is an associate investigator at the Laureate Institute for Brain Research. He'll be speaking to the local chapter of the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers tomorrow at noon in the University of Tulsa's Keplinger Hall on the potential therapeutic value of transcranial electrical stimulation. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.